Chris Lewerton here, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. Well, in honor of Veterans Week, I have a lady in here, Teresa Muth Smith. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you.
Now, Teresa, you didn't actually serve in the service. However, you were married to a serviceman.
Yes.
Michael Smith.
Yes.
Yes.
He was a Vietnam veteran.
Yes. And we have you here. We're gonna talk a little bit about Michael. But okay. First of all, about you. All right. You're a Muth. You grew up in Kane.
And I went to Holy Ghost in Jerseyville. So I think sometimes it was kind of a split in where you were from. Even though you were raised in Kane, you had more activities in Jerseyville at the time.
Yeah, I know a girl that lived in Kane.
I think you do.
Yes. Yes. So you grew up in Kane, went to Jersey. And then when you graduated, where were you off to?
Well, I ended up getting married early.
Yeah.
And as most people back then, had two children, got divorced, and ended up going to Lewis and Clark College, and I became a registered nurse.
That's a good job.
Yes. And then I worked for Dr. Wessenfeld in Jerseyville, one of our oldest and greatest doctors, actually. He's probably the only person I know that still did house calls back then.
Right.
Yes, he did. So anyway, when he retired, I ended up going to Alton Mental Health Center. I became a psychiatric nurse where I worked for 30 years, and I retired in 2014.
I see, a psychiatric nurse. So what was that like?
Lots of stories.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It must have been pretty fulfilling. You did it for 30 years.
Yes. Let's put it this way. Never had a dull day.
I bet.
You know, I actually worked the forensic unit that's unfit to stand trial in, and NGRIs, not grounds by reason of insanity. For 15 of those years. The first 15 I worked on a unit with mental retardation patients with a mental disability, and the state closed that, which actually I really liked working there. It was very fulfilling working with patients such as that.
That being said, share an interesting, something that you learned interesting that, you know, the average listener doesn't realize about working with mental retardation.
I think basically that if it comes right down to it, the patients we had hardly any families that cared about them. So they became, in a way, our children is probably the best way. And my staff and I became very close to them. And, you know, their needs, they had a lot of needs. I mean, you know, it was exciting if you could get one to tie their shoes, and they were an adult. I know that sounds awful in a way, but also it was very fulfilling to know that you could do something to get them one more step to normal.
Uh-huh, yes. Now, we'll get on because this is Veterans Week, and we're talking about veterans. And one thing we had talked about a few days ago, you and I, was about the trials and the tribulations. Your husband was in the Vietnam War.
Yes.
And the trials and tribulations of those folks that came back from the Vietnam War. Go ahead, tell us what you experienced firsthand.
Okay, well, Michael still had nightmares even, you know, from post-traumatic stress syndrome. He was in Vietnam during the Tet, which was probably the probably scariest time there was in Vietnam.
Can you explain Tet?
The Tet was supposed to be an area of time when it was a holiday. And there was supposed to be a ceasefire during that period because it was an Asian holiday.
Yes.
And it was a time when all the base camps almost got overrun.
Oh, really?
Actually, it was to the point where ammunition was low, and as Mike always said, the only thing that saved him was the Navy. As funny as that is, he's an Army guy, because if it hadn't been for the ships that shot mortar in to the area, the camps would have been overrun during that period of time.
See.
So it was a very, it was a crucial time in the Vietnam War, to be exact, because after the Tet is when political power and our president decided that, you know, should we stay there, should we not?
What years were we talking?
The Tet was in 68.
Oh, so Mike was in there early.
67, 68, yes.
Okay.
He was inducted when he was 18, and he went over 18 and a half, if I remember right, and he was back by the time he was 19 and a half, almost 20, so, but that's pretty crucial.
He was back in the States?
He was back in the States by that time. He was in Vietnam. Usually when you were in Vietnam, you had to stay 1 year.
Okay.
So he was there a year, and as he always used to, he used to say it, and 2 months, 3 days, he'd count it to the T, as I can say, you know, because it was such a crucial time and stuff.
Yes. I suppose, did he have any joy over there? Was there anything that he liked?
Every so often, he'd say he'd run in to a Jerseyville guy.
Oh.
You know, and that was kind of nice. And so, you know, that was interesting that even that far away, you know, he'd run into a comrade or something from his hometown or something. But most of the time, it was just a scary, very time. You know, he talked about Agent Orange.
Yes.
And about how, at first, when Agent Orange was sprayed over there for the vegetation, and the reason they did that, because the jungles just were so extreme, that they would spray it.
The planes would come over and they'd just fog it.
Yes.
With this poison.
Yes.
Okay.
And in 45 minutes, the trees would be brown.
Okay.
And then bulldozers would come in, and they would actually bulldoze it into a great big pile, so you'd have that to inhale. And then they'd burn it. So you actually got inhaled it three different times.
So how far away were the soldiers from this happening?
Oh, probably not even 50 feet.
They were really ahead
of it, yes.
So they were just right there in it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, go on about Agent Orange.
Well, anyway, when Mike first come back, he didn't realize he had it. You know, it didn't really show up for us until in his 30s. And we had just gotten married. Our son was like 6 years old at the time, and he had a major heart attack.
Just 10 years later.
Yes. And then it ended up that he ended up like having osteoporosis. Like, we had a clubhouse down at the river, and he would pick up like a stick and break his wrist.
Oh my.
And then the next weekend he did the same thing and broke his other wrist. It was really interesting. So of course we were like, what's going on here? Why is all this happening to him? And we ended up going to the VA. And of course back then they were just hearing about Agent Orange. There was a lot of soldiers that died before they were ever diagnosed with with Agent Orange. That's the sad factor.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about the wall, and on the 58,479 people on that wall, but sometimes I'll think to myself and wonder how many others died from Agent Orange, you know, from Vietnam.
Right.
Because they should be listed somewhere, too.
Yeah.
And when I kind of knew I was doing this interview, I looked up some statistics, and they said that Agent Orange actually affected 2 million people.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot of the people that we know or known from around here definitely affected by it.
Yes.
Let's circle back just a little bit and tell me about when Mike came home.
Oh, I think that was probably the most traumatic. He flew home on TWA, he told me. And when he was on the plane, the stewardess asked them all to change their uniforms.
Really? Why?
Because there were protests going on at all the airports. And people were having, you know, rotten fruit thrown at them, things thrown at them because they had been in Vietnam. As you know, that was also the time of the protests at all the colleges over the Vietnam War. And, you know, they were called baby killers.
Right.
That wasn't all. These were 18-year-old kids, 19-year-old right. kids that, you know, they kind of.
And it's not like they chose to go over there.
No, he was drafted.
Sure. Now, what year would this have been?
He came back in 68.
Okay.
And he was in, well, actually, I have his DW-214 here. I brought it along just in case we needed dates. You know, sometimes okay. you need to be clarifying.
That's right. Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Teresa Muth Smith with me, married to Michael Smith, a veteran at Vietnam. And Michael's passed away, but Teresa's just sharing some thoughts that Michael never talked about, but she's going to talk about them.
Okay. He was inducted in November of 66. And as I said, he was in through the 67, 68 during the Tet War. He was in the right, in the Vietnam area.
Yeah, in the thick of it.
Yes.
Okay. So he comes back and you're telling me they have to change their clothes.
They're told by the stewardess they have to change their clothes.
Industry clothes. Okay.
But it didn't really matter because they knew TWA brought the soldiers back. I guess they must have had a special contract with the government at the time.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't matter.
So we landed. What happened after they landed?
Well, they had some thrown objects at them, getting off the planes and stuff. There was protests going on at the time.
And they couldn't keep these people away from these soldiers?
Evidentially not.
Huh.
So.
And he hated that, of course.
Oh, yes. He always remembered that.
Did he ever get over it?
No, I don't think so. I think he always felt like, and most Vietnam veterans that I've talked to, several, I think they felt the same way. And I think another thing that really bothered them, they never got to win.
Yeah.
As simple as that. They got pulled out. And as I said, I did some history this week over this after we had our talk. And one of the things, the reason the war was stopped was because of the fact that the social outcry was so traumatic that they decided to pull out at Vietnam. That had a lot to do with it, to be truthful. It was also the time when they stopped the draft, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
In 1975, Nixon stopped the draft, and it was because of all the political unrest over Vietnam.
Yes.
And that been going, and the draft was erected in 1917.
Really?
Yes, I didn't know that. Until, like I said, I looked at it and thought, wow, that's kind of interesting to know.
Yeah, I can remember. Of course, I graduated in high school in 76. So, but I can remember my brother, Jeff, graduated in 71. And the guys, his buddies, being at our house. And when they got their draft numbers, that was a big deal.
Oh, yes.
You know,
I remember my own brothers going through that.
Yeah. It's like, what number did you get?
Right.
Yeah. And then a lot of them enlisted versus getting drafted because they went into a versus getting drafted in the Army.
Well, I think back then, if I remember, because I graduated in 72 and a lot of my friends got it, you know, enlisted or got drafted. And it was the key thing was if you enlisted, you got to pick what part of the service you're in.
Exactly. Right.
If you got drafted, you just went.
You didn't
wherever
have a
they sent you.
You didn't have a choice. You were
That's
gonna
right.
be a grunt somewhere.
That's right.
So Michael was able, you said he was the commander of the American Legion.
Yes, during the 90s.
Yes, and he liked that job.
Oh, yes, he did very much.
And you said tell me about him being a veteran.
Well, Mike was a veteran, true and true. That's about the best way to say it. He believed in the color guard. He believed in the Thanksgiving dinners. When he was actually the American Legion veteran in the 90s, we had 500 members.
Really?
Yes. We were the largest practically in this part of the state in the 20th district. So he really encouraged people to be involved.
Did we talked a few days ago. Didn't you say that the kids, the vets today, the younger ones, aren't really that interested in belonging to the Legion, the American Legion?
No.
Yeah, why is that, you think?
Well, number one, the American Legion has rules. You do know that. You
no,
have
I didn't.
To be a member during the wartime.
Oh.
It has to be a war going on before you can be an American Legion, at least unless they've changed in the last few years.
Well, we've had plenty of wars.
Yes, but during a wartime, you can get into the American Legion. But if it's not, you cannot get into the American Legion. A lot of people don't know that. But Mike always was hoping that we'd never have a war again and that it would become the Sons of the American Legion and the auxiliary that would run the American Legion. That was his hope. Now, how things are going now in the last few years with his health going down, I never got as involved with the American Legion as I used to be. You know, I guess with age, you can say that we totally went another way. And he became color guard of the Tri-County Color Guard.
Okay. And tell me about that, the Tri-County Color Guard.
Well, at one time, he was at Jerseyville, and he was in the post there. And they have the 492 Color Guard. And those guys are wonderful. And actually, some of them are actually in the Tri-County Color Guard, too. And the key thing about the Tri-County Color Guard was that Mike believed that the last thing you can do for a serviceman is to bury him.
Yes.
With full honors. And that there wasn't enough members, Color Guard members, to do that. And if you really think about it, if you've ever been to a veteran's funeral recently.
My father's. Oh, not recently. But
what was the basic age of one of the Color Guard?
They're older.
They? Yes.
Yeah.
I can remember Mike, I think at one time he told me he'd already did like 1,800 funerals.
Wow. I'll
yeah,
be
he'd been in it since he had been a Color Guard member in either 492 or the new Tri-County Color Guard for probably the last 25 years until the last 5 years. He really didn't participate. He was more like, you know, the leader. He got mm-hmm. the ammunition. He did those kind of things, organized things, then do it because of his health. The doctors wouldn't let him do it anymore. Because some funerals, you know, it can be minus 30 out there.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
And, you know, which I can remember one time when he still did it and he was having so much heart trouble, the doctors told him he shouldn't be doing that. And I said, you know, you're supposed to wear a mask if you're in the cold. And he says, well, that'd look really bad. And I said, well, it'd look really bad if you passed out in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And actually, one member did one time.
Oh, yeah?
It was kind of, I teased the guy that did it because he passed out. But it was from the heat. It wasn't from the cold.
Okay.
And they actually took him back to the hospital in an ambulance. Or, I mean, in the hearse. And that's when he woke up. And I asked him, have to tell me you had to be scared when you found yourself in the back of a hearse coming to. So, I mean, there's, you know, there's sober moments and then there's some comical moments, you know. He had some really wonderful friends in the Legion and the camaraderie that those guys have. Nobody else has because of the fact they had something in common.
Yeah, and they all together, risking mm-hmm. their lives
yes.
to stay alive. Yeah,
Mike went to a lot of conventions and a lot of different other things when he was in the American Legion involved. And one of the people that he knew the most was Russell Dunham.
Oh, okay.
Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yes.
And the one thing that Russell told me one time, he said, winning my medal was nothing. Living with my medal is harder.
I'll be darned.
Because of the fact that you have to, you know, be an upstanding citizen, you always worry about what people think. But when he ended up actually winning it, you know, he went up a hill with a mattress, I guess, took out a sniper's nest, from what I'd heard. I don't know the exact details, and I don't want to get it wrong. But when you think about it, he's probably right. When you're in a emergency situation, your mind just takes over. But when it's all over with, you have to live with what you've done. Yes.
Hey, now we've got a few minutes left. I want to talk to you, I want you to talk about the Fisher House. People might not know about the Fisher House. Okay. So explain about that.
Okay. In April of 23, Mike fell and broke his hip, and he was in Barnes Hospital. And from there, he went to Jefferson Barracks, and he wasn't doing very well. And the doctors wanted me there more because he wasn't eating. So one of the nurses looked at me and said, "You need to stay at the Fisher House." And I kind of looked at him and said, "Fisher House? Can I stay there?" And they said, "Any veteran can stay at the Fisher House." A lot of people don't know that. If you live 60 miles, which we do by living in Jerseyville.
Well, what is the Fisher House?
The Fisher House is a house where if you have any problems, you can go and you can stay during a hospital visit, your loved ones. If your husband's in the hospital and you live so far away, you can actually stay there. They have appointed
rooms.
No
charge?
No charge.
Okay.
Appointed rooms. They have like 5 freezer full of food. They have a huge
free food.
Free food. Yes. And it was really interesting because when I stayed there, it was during Memorial Day. And like the unions in St. Louis would bring in barbecued food where they'd had picnics and bring it to the Fisher House to stay.
How many people would be able to stay there? How many rooms are we talking?
I would say, because they have 2 floors, an elevator to go up, I would say there's 15, 16 rooms.
Okay.
And there was couples staying there when I was there. One gentleman had actually been there for 6 months because he had a lung transplant at Barnes.
Yeah.
And his wife was staying there. They were from like down in Missouri somewhere, like 100 miles away, and they were actually staying there, and they would take them to their appointments every day. A car would pull up, and that was another volunteer group that was tied in with the Fisher House, and they would actually take you to your appointments. So any couples that are older and they have a hard time driving, it would be a place. It doesn't matter what hospital you're in.
Especially avoiding the traffic.
Yes. The traffic in St. Louis is horrible.
Right.
But it would be really nice for the couples that they know that there's a place. If they go to Barnes and they have to stay in there or they have to have rehab and it's going to take like days and consecutive concession, the best thing would be that the social worker at any of the hospitals in St. Louis knows to get a hold of the Fisher House, and they will contact them and get them in.
Well, that is good to know. And but you know what? We've run out of time.
Great.
But Teresa, thanks so much for coming in today. Enjoyed you today. It was nice.
Well, thank you very much.
So you have a great day.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll definitely remember Mike, that's for sure.
Well, thank you. That means a lot.